Is this what the kids call house music, Bennett? No? Am I way off?
Not quite.
No. What is this?
Lord.
Oh, I know Lord. Okay. L-O-R-D-E. Yeah. Okay. 720 WGN. John Hansen here filling in for Dave Plyer, who's off. One quick moment before we get to Stephanie Lule, who's sitting next to me in the studio. We do have a text from the 847 about Christmas lights and Christmas decorations and mixing and matching and all my rules that me and my family have about what to do and not do. The number one rule from the 847, don't mix themes. So it's either religious or it's fanciful. For example, Santa and the elves were not visitors to the manger, nor was a giant blow-up Frosty, which I completely agree with. So that's a great rule. If you're going to go nativity, go nativity.
But a Frosty in a snow globe, now that's okay.
Now that's fine.
There you go.
Absolutely. And at the nativity scene, if you have like a Wendy's Frosty, I mean, that would be fine. Yeah. I mean, everyone needs a little
refreshment.
Each
of the characters holding a Wendy's Frosty.
Everyone,
there you go.
Exactly. Stephanie Lule is to my right. She is a reporter for DNAinfo.com Chicago, which is my favorite place, and I miss you guys so dearly. I just left last week for my new gig at WCIU-TV, which is great and all, but I miss you, Stephanie. We talked almost every morning.
We do, John. I was going to ask you, what do you call this? Is this, do you say good morning or
yeah, this
or
is good morning. You know, it's interesting because, Bennett, the first time I filled in, we had Patty Wetley in, and we talked about beer in the first hour because we feel like from 2 to 3, that's still Saturday night, then by about 3 or 3:30, right about now, is where we start to, I mean, we say morning all the time just to keep it, you know, professional.
Right.
But we're saying, you know, this is now morning. It feels more, a little bit more like morning, right?
People are waking up, right, John?
Exactly. So Stephanie Lule joins me. You cover the West Loop, the Pilsen neighborhood, North Lawndale too, a lot of that area. And a lot of people woke up Wednesday to the news that this restaurant had burned down in Pilsen. And to a lot of people, especially maybe people that live in the suburbs, you know, it rang as just another restaurant burning down. But to people that have either visited there from all over the city, but especially people in the Pilsen neighborhood, Nuevo León, this is a big deal.
It is, John. You know, we're talking about a restaurant that has been in the neighborhood on 18th Street for 53 years.
Wow.
There's now a third generation running the restaurant. It's kind of like an icon. You know, if you go to the neighborhood, if you're from outside of the neighborhood, it's the one spot that you definitely hit, right?
And it's the iconic Mexican restaurant spot,
right?
In a neighborhood of iconic Mexican restaurants.
Right. And its facade, it's just so, you know, when you think of Pilsen, you kind of think of Nuevo León. And, you know, with that, so many celebrities, not only Mexican celebrities, but so many big celebrities to us, right? Like Leonardo DiCaprio, Martin Sheen, you know, so many politicians have been there. It's kind of like the, you know, the spot that you hit. It's authentic Pilsen.
So Wednesday morning, late Tuesday, Wednesday morning, I don't know exactly when, it burned down, or a lot of it did burn down. Do fire officials have any idea what happened yet?
No, they don't know a cause yet, John. They're still investigating that.
And is the structure completely gone? I know in the story you'd written when they talked about rebuilding, there was still thoughts that the ceiling might collapse. I mean, it's not a stable situation right now.
I would say they're still looking at that too, right? But for all intents and purposes, yes, it is a complete gut.
Right. This isn't like something like just the kitchen area burned and then they're going to bring in some new stuff. This is a complete rebuild, or maybe a complete tear down and rebuild.
Right. You know, we talked to one of the owners, Danny Gutierrez Jr., that's, you know, this third generation running the restaurant now. And he said that they're looking at, they think, an 8 months to a year to rebuild.
Wow. And I think that, you know, for the owners, obviously they have the concerns of their themselves, but I imagine what not only they are worried about, but the neighborhood. A lot of people work there, and you know they don't have the capital saved to manage through this. What are they doing in the short term and then longer term as well for plans to make sure that these people have jobs, have money coming in around the holidays.
Right, John. That is totally the tragedy in all of this. You know, not only that this family is affected, but that there are a good 50 employees that were working there. If you've ever been in Nuevo León,
wow, 50 employees.
It is packed always.
Yeah.
It's just really busy. They're, you know, they turn tables fast. So there's a good 50 employees, you know, outside of the family that are affected by this. And like you're saying, right before Christmas, right before the holidays, right when a lot of families need that influx of cash, right? You're buying presents, you're maybe preparing for big meals with your family, maybe traveling to see family. So for this to happen 3 weeks before Christmas is, you know, devastating to some of these working class families. There's a number of things, actually, that it's been really neat to see the neighborhood. They've really rallied together to help these families. There, you can find out on my story on DNAInfoChicago.com. There is a GoFundMe that I linked to, a GoFundMe, you know, campaign.
And crowdsourcing, yeah.
Right. To date, there's been $6,500, almost $7,000 raised, and it will be giving directly to those families.
Oh, okay. So that's not for a rebuild. That's for the families themselves.
It is for workers who are affected by this. And, you know, their goal is to raise $50,000 before Christmas to help these families. The 18th Street Development Corporation, a nonprofit, is overseeing that. So it's a legit fundraiser. I know in today's day and age, a lot of people are skeptical of these fundraisers now, but it's being overseen by a great organization.
It's interesting because it's a very popular restaurant, it's not like they're even if they're packed every day, the restaurant business is tough.
So very tough.
It's not like even the owners have so much capital that they can just dish out $1,000 to each person. There's just not that kind of money laying around in the restaurant business.
Right. And we're talking working class families who, you know, maybe don't have a lot saved, and their landlord needs their rent, and you know, there's all the normal expenses that come along with having a loss of income too. One of the really neat things that I've seen out of this, you know, it's really neighbors helping neighbors. It's so great. Is a restaurant in Bridgeport. It's called Fabulous Freddy's Italian Eatery. Pretty much right away, they chipped in and said, "Hey, we'll hire a couple of your employees. You know, whatever can do." Because they had this happen to them in 2011. They're a family-owned business, and they had their entire restaurant on 31st Street burned to the ground. So they know, you know, what kind of devastation this causes.
And the uphill battle.
Mm-hmm. When I talked to owners there, they said, you know, the thing that a lot of people don't realize when this happens is that it's not only, a loss for the employees, a loss of income, things like that. The entire family is often working at these type of family-owned restaurants. And so it's an entire, you know, large family, maybe extended cousins, everyone, who all are losing their money at once, right?
Yeah, it's a terrible situation, and the timing again is bad. There's some glimmers of hope already in that there was a spot across the street, a smaller thing that they own, and they're at least trying to still produce some food and get some income coming in.
Right, the son was in the process of opening a restaurant bar right across the street. You know, they were looking at a couple of months for that to be open. As soon as it burned down the next, that next morning, right? This happened overnight. Alderman Danny Solis was meeting with city officials to basically brainstorm any way that they can help that new spot right across the street on 18th Street open as fast as possible to help out the Gutierrez family. That's the family that owns Nuevo León.
So if people want to help, and, you don't ever have to have gone there if you can relate to the idea of someone in need around the holiday season, families in need. I imagine you linked to the GoFundMe page in the story. So, it's so hard sometimes on any website to find old stories. DNA Info, if you just Google search DNA Info Nuevo León, you're going to find this story. It'll
absolutely
be one of the first
pop
results.
Right up.
Yeah, exactly. And you can click on the story and then follow the links. We're talking about this family-oriented stuff, everyone helping each other out. That's a lot of what the Pilsen neighborhood is and has been for a long time. But things are changing, perhaps, in the neighborhood. And we're going to get into that a little bit. We're going to kind of piggyback off this. And every neighborhood goes through changes. But the Pilsen neighborhood in recent years has gone through some incredible ones. And Stephanie and I are going to talk about that after this quick break on 720 WGN. I'm John Hansen, filling in for Dave Plyer on this Sunday morning. Maybe a little foggy out by you, so if you're traveling on the expressways, especially in the outlier areas, be careful. Keep those fog lights on. Stephanie Lule, we've been talking about Nuevo León in the Pilsen neighborhood and how people can help after that location burned down. And I thought, since we were bringing you on and we're bringing you in studio, let's talk about something that we've talked about when we were colleagues at DNA Info often. The changing Pilsen neighborhood, known for so long as a Mexican stronghold in the community, of course. And I don't want to say that's slowly fading away, but in many ways, that's a concern. And ground zero, to use the term very loosely, where a lot of the anger has been focused, is this coffee shop on 18th Street called Beau Truss. Locally owned place. They have a few different spots in Chicago, right? But people have put up signs. Some people that we don't know who have been putting up signs being like, get your coffee with all this gentrification and all this stuff. So that is an undercurrent in the neighborhood, right?
Absolutely, John. You know, if I had one word to describe Pilsen right now, it would be changing. You know, it is a neighborhood that's rapidly changing. Historically, you know, right now it's, or 10 years ago, right. 20 years ago, it's a predominantly Mexican neighborhood. And, you know, historically, other enclaves, you know, groups of people, it was a Czech neighborhood for a long time, like a lot of,
neighborhoods,
you know,
change.
Chicago neighborhoods, right. And so what's going on with Botra? So this, for some reason, this coffee shop has really, you know, taken the brunt of the anti-gentrification, you know, movement that's going on in the neighborhood. And it is a strong one. But it's interesting that this specific coffee shop, there are so many businesses opening, John. Mm-hmm. You know, Giordano's has just opened in Pilsen. There's a Geno's East opening soon. Other new coffee shops, you know, record stores now. I think we're on our third or fourth record store opening.
All these things that signal hipster, yuppie, you know, invasion.
It's the definition of gentrification, right? I mean, yeah, gentrification personified, right?
I want to zoom out just for a second, Stephanie, because maybe a lot of our listeners aren't familiar with where the city's neighborhoods are. If you're coming in on the Dan Ryan and you're stuck in traffic, look to your left, that's Pilsen. If you're on the Eisenhower, 290, it's south by about 14 or 15 blocks of there. It's on the southwest side of the city.
Yeah, I would call it like the near southwest side,
right? Exactly.
It is very close to downtown,
off
the west
Pink
Loop.
Line, yeah. Yep. And it's that proximity and the access to public transportation that I imagine made it, as we often see, like we saw in Wicker Park, you know, first you get artist types, bohemian types to move into the neighborhood because it's cheap, it's affordable, and then slowly but surely you get a lot more people in their 20s and 30s. And I think it's probably exacerbated by the fact that a lot more people in their 20s and 30s are living and staying in Chicago as opposed to moving out to the suburbs.
Absolutely, John. You know, we're two of those people,
yeah,
right?
No,
we're...
I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, I live in Ukrainian Village. I am not Ukrainian. I live near Humboldt Park, and I'm not Puerto Rican.
Right.
So, And it's interesting because when I talk to like people in the neighborhood, I visit all the local shops and I love to talk to people of any race, creed, color, whatever, who have lived there forever. When you talk to everyday people, do you get the sentiment that this is a real thing? Do we kind of blow it up a little bit, or is it a vocal minority of people that are upset about this, or is it a groundswell from everyone in the community?
I definitely wouldn't call it a vocal minority. I would say it depends on who you talk to, right? You know, that I've talked to longtime residents who say that this isn't a huge problem and it's just the way things go in Chicago. And you know, I've talked to families who are, you know, super upset that they're being displaced, and they, you know, they want their old neighborhood back, basically. And you know, we talked a little bit about Botras, what's going on there. And, you know, it kind of reached a fever pitch recently because those anti-gentrification signs, I think it was the business was hit twice with them. But the third time, it was hit with signs that said white people out of Pilsen.
Right.
Now, that angered a lot of people, you know, this racial undertone to this message. And I should say that's really the only time, one of the few times I've ever heard it, you know, being
classed by race as opposed to like socioeconomic situations or backgrounds or stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I had a conversation, and the podcast is still up at DiginaInfo.com, about Chicago's neighborhoods with Dr. Dominic Pasiga, who is a historian, history professor at Columbia College, and he was from the Back of the Yards neighborhoods. He writes about change all the time, and we talked specifically about Pilsen, and he says what's interesting is if you were this isn't just Mexican families being kicked out of Pilsen. A lot of Mexican families have moved on their own,
right?
And it's part of the natural human evolution of movement in that you establish roots where you can afford, you support a family, you build it, and when you can, you get a job, and when you can move to a better, quote unquote, better place, you do. So it's not just, you know, white, quote unquote, people, yuppies coming in and kicking people out. There's been some internal movement as well, I imagine.
Yes, but there are other families who would tell you, we've moved because we had to. We couldn't afford Pilsen anymore.
Renters versus buyers. That's a whole other thing. Like if you bought a house there, if you're, you know, your family settled down 20 years ago, you were able to buy a house, you're sitting pretty. You can either sell and make a ton of money, or you're fine. You're going to stay there. Your property value might go up and the taxes might go up. But imagine it's those renters that are really feeling it.
renters and, you know, owners where maybe like your family own the home and you might be interested in taking it over, but you just have decided that Pilsen, you can't afford it. There's a number of families that I've talked to. It's just kind of like they move southwest. They moved to Little Village or they moved to Cicero. But they really have these roots in Pilsen, and really their families, three generations have grown up there, and they wish that they could still be there and be a part of this vibrant neighborhood.
So what do local leaders say about it? Is it just fait accompli? This sort of stuff just happens? Is there things that they can do to try and not necessarily stop gentrification, but ease its transition, maybe help people who are moving to the neighborhood understand its roots and embrace some of those things, even if they aren't of that same background?
Mm-hmm. So again, it depends on who you ask. Alderman Danny Solis, longtime alderman, grew up in Pilsen, Mexican American. He would say Pilsen, and he has said several times, Pilsen has never been better. And he said even my critics would say that about it. But if you talk to groups like Pilsen Alliance, other groups that are kind of fighting this anti-gentrification battle in Pilsen, they would say Pilsen is definitely not better than ever, for the working class families that, in their opinion, made this neighborhood.
So, but are there concrete ideas? I mean, is it a matter of trying to put controls on rents? I mean, it's not something we have here in Chicago. I mean, is there things that they outline that they want the aldermen to do?
So that's a great question, John. One of the things that I'm working on right now is a story about, the housing issues in Pilsen and what Pilsen Alliance and other groups are doing in an effort to combat, the swell of developers moving in, buying up everything and making everything unaffordable for the people who are living there.
It's interesting because you not only cover Pilsen and the changing neighborhoods, you cover the West Loop,
right?
Which is another fascinating neighborhood of change. And we had this big blow up just a couple months ago. People that have moved in the neighborhood and recently buyers not wanting new developments with renters. And it's not like renting is cheap in the West Loop either. So that isn't a race thing at all. That's we want people that are going to live here and not change our property values sort of thing.
That's right, John. And I think you're totally right. It's interesting covering these two very different neighborhoods where in the West Loop, the biggest concern for buyers is, can I buy, a property at all? Because everything is getting bought up, for cash, right?
Right. Stephanie Lule, not only did we work together at DNAinfo.com Chicago for plenty of time, we also worked at the Daily Illini down at the University of Illinois.
We did. ILL, John.
Absolutely. I&I. Our sports teams aren't doing too hot, of course. What's it like being a neighborhood reporter? I mean, obviously, I've worked with a lot of you guys. And, we mentioned, you have two vastly different neighborhoods you get to cover and how fascinating that is. Patty Wetley gets to cover different neighborhoods. Heather Sharon, everyone covers these neighborhoods. That's got to be really interesting since DNA Info really focuses on being a hyper-local site that you really get to know your sources really well.
It's true, John. I've worked a lot of different places, and what we're doing at DNA Info, I could not be more excited about. I really couldn't. We're out, on the streets finding these stories that really no one else in town is finding. And it's exciting to bring the neighborhoods to the rest of people, these great stories from the neighborhoods to the rest of Chicago, right?
Stephanie Lule, thanks for coming to the studio. Thanks to your boyfriend for enduring a flat tire on the way, right?
Absolutely. Thanks, Rhett.
A little bit of a journey for Lule to get on in here. Stephanie, thanks for your time. And for more information, where can people go?
DNA Info Chicago. And like you said, I cover Pilsen and West Loop, and you can
sign up for the newsletter.
Sign up for my newsletter.
Absolutely. Got a quick break, then we're going to have news more on the way here at 720. I almost said DNA Info. No, we're just so used to that. I'd say more neighborhood news coming up, which there is on 720 WGN.